It's Tuesday, December 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. In the next half hour, a U.S. space company does something that no one has done before. We'll ask our technology correspondent why SpaceX is so excited about launching a rocket and then successfully landing it. We'll also speak to the International Organization for Migration, which just announced that 1 million migrants have entered Europe this year. And we'll talk about British pop star Adele's new hit song. It's all ahead on International Edition. U.S. aerospace manufacturer SpaceX has moved closer to making space travel more affordable after successfully launching and returning a rocket to Earth. It was the first time that any organization has pulled off such a feat in the history of space travel. The SpaceX staff were ecstatic as they watched Monday night's mission unfold, with their Falcon 9 rocket blasting off from Cape Canaveral in Florida and then landing its first stage at the same site a few minutes later. Shortly after that, the rocket's second stage successfully deployed 11 small satellites into low Earth orbit for a communications company. So just how significant was this achievement? That's a question that I put to VOA technology correspondent George Putich.
I think significance is huge. It's enormous because this ushers a new era in space travel. Up to now, all rockets used for launching any kind of space vehicle was just discarded, thrown into the ocean. But this time the rocket came back and it will be reused. Maybe not this first one because this will have to be dissected and analyzed, but it is obviously possible to reuse rockets.
And why does SpaceX want to reuse rockets?
Basically, it's to lower the cost of space travel. To build a rocket like this, Falcon 9, for instance, costs about $16 million. To refuel it costs only $200,000. So you can see how big the saving can be.
And how soon are we going to actually see these kinds of rockets reused for spaceflight?
I think very soon. SpaceX Corporation plans to build another rocket very soon and use it and reuse it for supplying the International Space Station or for deploying satellites. But in the long run, rockets like these will be used for human space travel, eventually to Mars.
Well, yeah, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what exactly SpaceX is planning to do, you know, in the long term.
The CEO of SpaceX Corporation, Elon Musk, who, by the way, is also the owner of the Tesla Motor Electric Vehicle Corporation, has big plans. He thinks that by 2035, flights to Mars, human flights to Mars, will be a regular thing. So in order to lower the cost of those flights, he wants to build rockets that will be reusable. And it is probably, it's easy to see that the exploration of space is gaining momentum, and obviously reusable rockets will be very important.
We also had that big movie, The Martian, which is all about a NASA manned mission to Mars. So perhaps Elon Musk sees these rockets as playing a role in bringing that kind of story to reality.
Absolutely. He is a great innovator. He is, as I said, manufacturing very quality electric cars. He is building a huge factory for a new generation of batteries that will supply not only cars with power, but also our homes. So he is a great visionary, and I think he's doing the right thing.
Well, thank you very much to our science and technology correspondent, George Putich.
Pleasure was mine.
Well, it's time for a look at social media, and understandably, SpaceX is getting a lot of attention on Twitter today. SpaceX can be found on Twitter at SpaceX. It has 1.1 million followers. And a few hours ago, it tweeted a 6-second looping Vine video clip of the rocket descending to Earth. It was a video clip that got the attention of Darren Summerfield of Britain, who describes himself as a writer of strange fiction. Summerfield tweeted, "No, this is not in reverse. What an achievement by SpaceX." Well, Elon Musk, the CEO, is also on Twitter. He is at Elon Musk, and he has 3.1 million followers. Shortly after the successful second stage of the rocket launch, Musk tweeted, 11 satellites deployed to target orbit, and Falcon has landed back at Cape Canaveral. Welcome back, baby. Well, that was retweeted 9,000 times and favorited 17,000 times. SpaceX is getting a lot of praise on Twitter, including from the new CEO of Google, Sundar Pichai. Pichai tweeted, "Incredible achievement for SpaceX. Congratulations to the team. Inspiring to see such progress." Well, if you want to follow us on Twitter, the show is at @VOA_IE. You can also find me on Twitter at @Michael_Lippin. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
I'm Michael Lippin with VOA's International Edition. The NATO alliance has sent more troops to the southern Afghan province of Helmand to try to help Afghan government forces facing an onslaught from Taliban militants. London says a contingent of British military advisors arrived at Britain's former base in Helmand province on Tuesday. Well, for more on the situation in Helmand, my colleague Ira Melman spoke to VOA's South Asia correspondent Ayaz Ghul.
The Helmand province, which borders Pakistan, has been posing serious challenges for the Afghan security forces for the past few months. And now we see that the Taliban has intensified its campaign to capture the entire province. And that is what has prompted Britain to dispatch a group of military advisors to basically help the Afghan forces, according to officials, to coordinate their counteroffensives to repel the insurgent attacks.
So what is the method that they are using? Are they just outfighting the Afghan forces?
Well, that's what we are being told by the Afghan officials, that, you know, they have launched counteroffensives, counterattacks, and they have, reversed some of the military gains that the Taliban has made over the past few days. But it is very difficult to say exactly what is happening on the ground, because this province, as you know, is known for producing most of the world's poppy, the narcotics, which is being smuggled out of Afghanistan. And this income from this illegal drugs has been supporting the Taliban, and that is why the Taliban has been making maximum efforts to gain control of this province. So keeping all this in mind, it is very difficult to ascertain exactly what is happening on the ground. But what we understand from our discussions with local lawmakers and local officials, that in several key districts of Helmand, the Taliban has effectively established its control. And that is why, you know, we see now that the NATO-led Resolute Support Mission has finally jumped in and sent its forces to the region to make sure that the things of September this year are not repeated, when the key Kunduz, northern Kunduz city, fell to the Taliban. And it was only, the insurgents were flushed out only after the U.S. special forces arrived in the region to help the Afghan forces to counter the attack. So more or less, you know, we're seeing the same situation now happening in Helmand. But if this setback occurs and the Taliban gets control of the entire province, that will be a major demoralizing factor, you know, for the Afghan forces.
Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad reporting for International Edition. Thank you, Ayaz.
And Ayaz Ghul was speaking to International Edition's Ira Melman. The International Organization for Migration says the number of migrants and refugees crossing into Europe by land and sea this year has passed 1 million. That's four times the number that entered Europe in 2014. In a report released Tuesday, the IOM, which is based in Geneva, said the vast majority of this year's migrants crossed into Europe by sea, with more than 800,000 traveling from Turkey to Greece. Most of them are refugees from Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Earlier, I spoke to an IOM press officer in Switzerland, Joel Millman, and I asked him how his organization was able to tally such a big number of migrants.
Well, mostly we're relying on the data from ministries and law enforcement units across the Mediterranean shoreline, Greece, Italy, Spain, Malta. Mostly we're in contact with those governments and we get the data as soon as it comes in. We also have monitors at all the ports and the islands of Greece, not every island, but quite a lot, the big ones where migrants have been coming in this year, and also the ports in Italy where rescued migrants on the high seas are brought in for processing. So we're getting pretty reliable numbers from the agencies that are in charge of those rescues and the ones who are doing the registering in the various countries as well.
What are the main factors behind the influx of the migrants and refugees this year?
Well, the biggest is the change in the composition of refugees in the Middle East, principally Syria and Iraq. People that were staying in countries like Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan, to some degree, a tipping point was reached, and it just became much harder for people to remain there for a variety of reasons, and they began to follow the path. And we already had 40,000 Syrians last year came through Libya, so it was a pretty robust flow of Syrians going great distance to get to Tripoli and then get boats for Italy. That traffic largely shifted back to the Middle East, and you know, the people leaving Turkey. This year from Libya, we only had 7,000 Syrians. So we know that's moved back, and I'm sure that scale, 40,000 plus, just contributed to a much bigger number. It sort of snowballed up from that. And I don't have off the top of my head the total number for Syria, but it's something close to 800,000 plus that have come through Greece this year.
Well, the IOM released a statement saying that a more coordinated European response is beginning to take shape. What does that response look like?
Well, we're not really 100% sure of how the new border patrol is going to work, some of these new law enforcement measures, but it's just this fact that so many countries are agreeing to consider different types of resettlement numbers. It may be a quota, it may not be a quota, but it's something that we're confident that our members, you know, all 28 members of the EU are also IOM members, are working towards a solution that will work for the continent.
And how do you see this migrant wave continuing into next year?
Well, we don't see any immediate stop. I mean, the winters were always low traffic periods. That seems to be the case. I can only say that we didn't think last year's number would be repeated, and last year's number was quadrupled this year. It's hard to imagine even more migrants than this year coming next year, but we've learned not to be surprised.
Well, thank you very much to the IOM spokesman, Joel Millman. Thank you very much for speaking to International Edition.
My pleasure.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Stanford University School of Medicine scientists have found that mice who had suffered strokes recovered much faster if they were given low doses of a popular drug that helps treat insomnia. A stroke occurs when the brain's blood supply gets disrupted. According to the researchers, initial brain damage caused by a stroke usually takes place within a couple of hours after the blood flow is interrupted and then continues to spread until the brain starts to rewire itself. So far, there are no known drug therapies that can help patients with their recovery once a stroke has occurred. The researchers induced strokes in mice and then gave them low doses of Zolpidem, also known as Ambien. They found the drug helped enhance a type of brain cell signaling activity, which dramatically improved the mice's rate of recovery from a stroke. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Thank you.
This is VOA's International Edition. The U.S. government is making it more difficult for American hunters to kill lions in Africa and bring their remains back to the United States as hunting trophies. In a move announced on Monday, Washington extended legal protection to two sets of lions from Africa under the Endangered Species Act. It follows an American hunter's killing of a prominent African lion named Cecil in Zimbabwe in July, a killing that prompted outrage from conservationists. Well, for more on the U.S. move, my colleague Victor Beatty spoke to Jeff Flocken of the International Fund for Animal Welfare, which is a Washington-based group. Flocken said there's been a serious decline in the global lion population.
5 years ago, it was estimated there were about 32,000 wild lions left in the world. Now, today, based on more recent analyses, they think there may be less than 20,000.
Is there a concern that trophy hunting is contributing to this?
Actually, it's a fact it is. Studies have shown that trophy hunting is, in fact, causing populations that are being too intensely hunted to decline. Now, that's not the largest threat. There are threats from habitat loss, human encroachment, retaliatory killings that are resulting in more deaths of lions. But this is a threat that can be easily addressed. Through today's decision, hopefully this will help curb the hunting that's going on right now. Americans are responsible for over half of all lions killed in Africa every year. We're talking hundreds and hundreds of lions. And today's decision is going to make it more difficult for those hunters to go and kill these animals.
What role do African countries who have large lion populations have with regard to conservation? Are they doing a good job?
There are a lot of real challenges on the ground. And what we know is that for these solutions to work, they have to be done in cooperation and collaboration with local people who have to live beside wildlife. Lions are large, dangerous predators. They kill livestock, and sometimes they kill people. So when we come up with these ways to help wildlife, we have to make sure that they include local people and that they are part of the entire solution.
What will this U.S. Fish and Wildlife Directive do?
What will happen is, because of these protections now, the U.S. government will start scrutinizing permits to bring lions back into the country. And what will likely happen is there'll be entire countries in Africa that the U.S. government will no longer allow lion trophies to come back from. They'll be doing an analysis of which countries have management plans in place and conservation strategies to protect lions. Those countries that can't meet that standard will no longer be allowed to send lion trophies back to the U.S. after American hunters kill them.
Well, that was Jeff Flocken of the International Fund for Animal Welfare speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. Well, British singer Adele has just earned an eighth week at the top of the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 pop chart, her best ever performance for a single. VOA's Larry London gives us his take on that hit song with International Edition's Ira Melman.
Border Crossing's Larry London joins us. We're talking about Adele, another new song she has out, Larry?
That's right. And the current song, Hello, has been number one now six straight weeks. Her new album, 25, which is the best-selling album of the entire year in only 4 weeks, is also number one on the album charts. It's been number one since it came out 4 weeks ago and has sold close to 6 million copies right now. Her last album, which is 21, came out in 2011. It was at the time the best-selling album with 11-plus million copies sold. She's on track to top even that number. So she's hot, and she does have her second single. She's just announced what the official second single will be, and everybody's been anxiously awaiting the follow-up to the song Hello.
So you can't tell us.
It's such a secret I can't tell you. Well, actually, no, I will tell you, Ira, because I know you.
Yes.
It's called When We Were Young.
Aha.
And it's another ballad. But, you know, honestly, in my opinion, and who cares about my opinion, I like this song better than Hello, the first single. But we shall see. It'll be an interesting ride for Adele.
Everybody loves the things you do, from the way you talk to the way you move. Everybody here is watching you, 'cause you feel like home, you're like a dream come true. But if by chance you're here alone, can I have a moment before I go?
What makes her as hot as she is in the music market?
That's a great question. Well, she creates the demand, obviously. She doesn't come up with an album every year, so she's had us waiting for a while. And she's a great singer, a tremendously talented vocalist, and her lyrics are compelling. I mean, she writes great songs. She's had a lot of big hits, and right now she's riding that wave of popularity. Taylor Swift's enjoyed it. Katy Perry, a number of artists enjoy their popularity. Lady Gaga's another one who had her ride, and where has she been lately? You
know? With Tony Bennett.
There you go. Right. That's where she's been. But Adele is great, and she's just created enough weight to create the interest so that her album generated all kinds of sales, and it's doing very well so far. She was on television in New York. She will be on the Brit Awards February 24th. That's been confirmed. She'll perform at the O2 Arena in London. All kinds of Adele news. You know, everything she does gets written about. She's given up smoking. She said she's concerned about her health. She said she loves Beyonce. So aside from being a musician, she's an obsessed Beyonce fan. Who isn't? She's a mom to baby Angelo, which is one of the reasons she's taken the last 3 or 4 years off of music, is to be with her son.
A public relations goldmine.
Absolutely. She is really, really hot. She's talented, and everybody loves everything she does.
Border Crossing's Larry London here with us on International Edition.
Thank you, Ira.
Thank you, Larry.
It was just like a movie. It was just like a song.
And that's Adele bringing us to the end of International Edition on The Voice of America. This show was brought to you by director Patrice Martin. The engineer was Nick Ivanov. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. You can find me on Twitter at @VOA_IE. We'll see you next time.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
North Korea continues to pursue nuclear weapons and their means of delivery in violation of multiple UN Security Council resolutions and North Korea's own past commitments. While the United States continues efforts to engage North Korea diplomatically over its nuclear and missile programs, the United States is also committed to exposing North Korea's global proliferation network. The United States will continue enforcement of U.S. and U.N. sanctions in response to North Korea's proliferation of weapons of mass destruction and conventional weapons. These sanctions allow the United States and the international community to maintain pressure on the North Korean regime to denuclearize. In one example of recent sanctions enforcement actions, the State Department designated North Korea's strategic force, which has conducted multiple illicit ballistic missile launches. At the same time, the Treasury Department designated 6 regime financiers and 3 entities with ties to North Korea's weapons proliferation and illicit finance efforts. Together, these actions aim to further impede North Korea's weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missile programs, counter attempts to circumvent U.S. and U.N. sanctions, prevent the North Korean government from accessing the U.S. financial system, and maintain the effectiveness of sanctions. In addition to violating the United Nations Security Council resolutions passed since 2006, North Korea's nuclear and missile programs destabilize the region, and its proliferation activities undermine the global non-proliferation regime. The international community is united in demanding North Korea abandon its illicit weapons programs and abide by its obligations and commitments. The United States, South Korea, Japan, China, and Russia have all underscored the imperative of denuclearization.